time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, October 5th, 2020. We're excited about today's podcast. It's going to be the roundtable of the regulars, and we're looking forward to a great discussion. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. We just appreciate your feedback. So much feedback comes in. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. Two things are part of that we're really pleased with is the Industry Syndicate. Check out all of the podcasts on IndustrySyndicate.com as well as MortgageMedia.com. Thrilled to be a part of it. Also thrilled to have our sponsors here, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Be sure to check out the Mortgage Action Alliance app that you can download on your smartphone. It's an app that allows you to have your voice heard in Washington, D.C. on the Hill on important initiatives. And I tell you, it is something I was on last night, flipping through the various initiatives, thinking about what we're going to be talking about today. And I know Alice will cover some of that, but it's a great way to have your voice heard. And again, if you're not a part of the MBA, because you should be a part of the MBA, and so should your company. But if you're not, you still can participate. That's the best part. Get your company to sign up to be a member of the MBA. We look at all that the MBA is doing for us. It is really staggering. Also want to say a special thank you to Finastra, whose Fusion Mortgage Bot solution automatically addresses so many issues, compliance and delivery and borrower satisfaction. We even have a great POS in there that I encourage you to check it out. Go out to their website or also to our sponsorship page. You'll see Dan Putney and I talking, as well as some other information out there. I encourage you to check it out. Also, we're part of two co-ops, the Lenders One Co-op, as well as the Mortgage Collaborative Co-op. And both of these co-ops create competitive advantages for both lenders and vendor members. I've been communicating with members of both from the vendor tech side, as well as for the lender members, all really missing our get-togethers. Virtual meetings are honestly just not what an in-person meeting is. Something about that. We can work virtually. We're proving that. In fact, that's probably even working even better in some cases. But conferences that are virtually, well, I don't know. Hoping the MBA conference is wildly successful. Tricia says that they're getting good registration and they have got great sponsorship. So that's very exciting. Also, be sure to check out last week's podcast. I had Michael Jones on, the chairman of the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. Great discussion talking about some of the things that they're working on, the initiatives and the differences and the similarities between CMLA and MBA. Also, Indicom, a technology firm with mortgage expertise. And I tell you, we had Linda Beaumore on, and it was such a good podcast with her team talking about some of the things that they're working on. Go check out that podcast. August 31st of this year. Go back and check out the Indicom interview. It's really good. Also, Incelerate. This company does a great job. Josh, a friend, does a great job of helping lenders engage better with borrowers and prospects. I'm referring a lot of business over to them, and it was really good. Also, Ainsworth Advisors. This is a board of advisory service where more and more companies need to have an outside board. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae are both looking for this. So who is on your board? You need to get out and get a board of advisors. Check out AinsworthAdvisors.com as well as check out AI Assist. They're using artificial intelligence to reach borrowers. We're talking a little bit about this in the technology segment in the hot topic area. Also, Innovient, some of the best in business intelligence that's out there. They help you on your mortgage executions. I'm really impressed with Ted Kramer and what Innovient is building. Also, two others that are really helping lenders on the recruiting side, specifically of top talent. That's Mobility RE and Modex. Those two are the ones that are helping. Knowledge Group does a great job in training, and I love what they do. We're using them more. More training is needed. Talk about that a little bit later. analysis segment when in the hot topic segment. How are you training your people? Tool and learning management system is what that is, a knowledge group. But anyway, Mobility and Modex both helping you find the top producers and actually be able to verify that they're top producers. Check out also Velma, VendorServe, Vidyard. And then again, a big thank you to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Matt for their contributions each and every week. Let's get over to Rob Van Rapphorst with this week's MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, the Conference of State Bank Supervisors released a proposal seeking comments on prudential standards for state regulators to apply to IMB servicers. The new standards could lead to a uniform framework rather than a patchwork of different state requirements. MBA will work closely with its members to develop thorough comments on this proposal, which are due by December 31st, 2020. Also recently, the Financial Stability Oversight Council, also known as FSOC, issued a statement. The statement described potential financial stability risks that could result from stress at the GSEs and recommended that capital requirements be set in a manner largely consistent with the proposed requirements recently issued by the FHFA. Going forward, MBA will work with FHFA and other FSOC member agencies as further reforms of the GSEs are considered and implemented. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Good job, Rob. Appreciate our partnership with the MBA. Again, sign up for Mortgage Action Alliance. Download the app. It's the easiest way to do it. All right, let's get over to Les Parker and this week's macro view of the markets. He's got two of my favorite songs, a couple of my favorite songs, got a lot of them. But here's a couple of oldies and but goodies that he's mixed into the message. What you got for us, Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Power Seller, making hedging easy. Goodbye, gold. Goodbye, copper, too. Hello, bearishness. Markets are going up to cry. Tears are falling over the negative returns on mortgage pools that prepay quickly. A couple weeks ago, gold broke down, copper followed, and then stocks faltered, and all the while, mortgages moved little. With supply growing and demand waning, don't be surprised if prices sink. Low yields followed by high-speed payoffs cause investors to run away from losing money. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com and subscribe to my daily newsletter, Goodbye to Romance, that looks to end.
What you say? Oh, yeah. The Everly Brothers. Oh, my gosh. Brings me back to my high school days. I know that dates me. I am old. That's all right. No problem. I identify well with that music. Love the Everly Brothers. Les Parker, you did a great job on that. He just shot me over a note. Hey, by the way, he just reminded me on a text message. When you're signing up for TM Spotlight, use the word power to get the TM Spotlight, the paid version, for free. Check it out. Thanks, Les. You and Canterbone do an outstanding job. Appreciate you, Lester, very much. Let's get over to Matt Graham for the what's happening now. And talking about what's happening now is rates have been repricing. At least there's a good chance for it, Matt. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, Dave. Yeah, we already have quite a few negative reprices reported for the day, which is very early in the day to see that happening. And we'll get to that in just a second when we talk about this week's market movement. But let's get caught up real quick with last week on the data front. A couple of nice anecdotes for the housing market. Case-Shiller home prices up by 0.6% versus forecasts of 0.3. So more than double expectations. But the only caveat there is that's for July. And we know we're making up for some lost time with respect to housing market data bouncing back from its restricted time at the beginning of COVID. Applications declined a little bit, but I would probably chalk that up to something that's not very well tracked right now, which is distortions created by the rush to get applications in ahead of the adverse market fee. And I think that was happening in greater numbers in the previous week's application data because a lot of lenders had their re-implementation dates for that adverse market fee back then. Pending home sales obliterated the forecast and the previous record, rising to an all-time high for that data, which is just staggering. And you look at the thing on a chart and you're like, holy cow, the housing market's on fire. Yeah. And something we'll talk about in the roundtable, but we have some COVID-related data distortion possibilities there too, but nobody really knows how it's going to pan out. Core PCE, which is the inflation metric the Fed would like to see at 2% or now above 2% for a while, rose 1.6, which was 0.2% above forecast. Historically, inflation data is bad for rates, and generally speaking, all other things being equal, higher inflation equals higher rates. But we didn't see a huge reaction to that because markets know they have a long road ahead when it comes to getting to the Fed's inflation target. Then, of course, jobs report on Friday came in a little bit short in terms of headline job creation, but the unemployment rate dropped to 7.9. But another counterpoint to that counterpoint is that the labor force participation rate also dropped, meaning fewer people in the workforce, and that essentially makes the unemployment rate change a wash, basically where it was last month. So not a hugely strong jobs report. As far as news items that were of consideration to the bond market, we had several instances of stimulus headlines, the fiscal stimulus plan that seems to be hopefully coming soon, and the presidential debate on Tuesday night. It was maybe going to be a market mover, but ended up not necessarily causing an immediate reaction. And Trump getting COVID or the diagnosis reported on Friday, which sounded like it should have been a big market mover and may or may not be, depending on how we view today's trading action. So I think markets were a little bit nervous before the debate. Stocks had sold off a little bit and then recovered the day after the debate. And that also happened to be the day where we saw month-end trading and a lot of money piling into the stock market right at 9:30 a.m., which is usually a signal that you had some buyers waiting to make a trade for the NYSE open. And bonds got hurt at the same time, breaking out of a technical consolidation pattern they had been in leading up to that. Then on Thursday, we had a strong show of support in bonds, and we bounced at a ceiling in terms of 10-year yield that made it seem okay, maybe we're going to be okay. Maybe we're going to make it out of this and stay in the range. And then into the weekend. And here we are this morning with bonds right at 8:20 a.m. beginning to sell steadily.
Maybe start wondering when we're going to be up over the 1% point.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's going to dovetail into exactly what I'm about to talk about. We have small scale ways to look at these patterns and trends, and then larger scale, bigger picture things. So it's good to remember that those ranges may be vastly different, because we have this technical breakout in the small scale in the short term, which was relying on a ceiling of 0.72 to 0.73 in 10-year yields. Right now, we're up over 0.75. And so that's a breakout, technically speaking. And the consolidation pattern that we broke out of at the end of last week was even narrower. We were down to a daily range of about 3 bips in 10-year yields, which is excruciatingly narrow. So when we break out of these narrow ranges, there's no way that a 10-bip range, which, by the way, I should qualify, 0.62 to 0.72 has been the 10-bip range that we've been in for most of the last 2 months. Breaking out of that was inevitable. That's never going to last forever, or even necessarily for a very long time. And I think 2 months is a very long time for it to have lasted in the first place. So when you break out of that, just as breaking out of that narrower range I just talked about last week, the 3-bip range implied a move up to the ceiling of that 10-bip range. The breakout of the 10-bip range says, okay, now we need to assess what's going to happen inside the bigger range, the one that can last a longer time. And there are a couple different ways to approach that ceiling, but you mentioned when are yields going to go back up and over 1%. I would put the ceiling of that broader post-COVID sideways range in terms of 10-year yields at 0.95%, probably, because that's roughly where we had topped out previously. And that seems to be what a lot of trade desks view the broader range as. And what that means is that it's not a violation of the post-COVID low sideways range for yields to get all the way up to 0.95. Would it ruin a loan officer's day to bounce around in that sideways range in such a way that we move up to that ceiling? Absolutely. That's a very big change for somebody that's out there quoting rates. So it's just a really good thing to keep in mind that volatility in the medium term can still ruin your day, even if we are still sideways in the bigger picture. Real quick on the topic of stuff coming up this week, it's a very light trading week. ISM came out this morning. It was stronger than expected, likely contributed to the weakness that was already in progress. And we have Treasury auctions starting tomorrow, running through Thursday. It is the larger sized week for Treasury auctions, meaning 3s, 10s, and 30s. And then we have jobless claims with us, as always, on Thursday. Wholesale inventories on Friday, which is not really even a report worth mentioning. So it's basically a data-free week from here on out, with the exception of maybe jobless claims if it happens to say something very interesting.
Very interesting. So much going on. And I know with what's going on today, you're not going to be able to be a part of the Hot Topic segment. So I want to get into looking and discussing some of the topics you brought up that you would like to discuss at the roundtable that you think our listeners should know about. First of all, for those that don't know, we're talking to, of course, Matt Graham, who's the founder and CEO of MBSLive.net. Check it out. You must subscribe to this. It's such a good service. So on this website of yours, have all this dialogue going on and chatter going on between the origination community. And what is your read on that? That was one of the questions that I had put out to our listeners, and they go, what is he seeing on there? Is it going to be a sky's falling, it's all life's over, or what's your thought?
Well, there's definitely something to be said for making hay while the sun is shining. And there's a lot of uncertainty with respect to where markets are going to go. But I think that people really understand that when we have a big refi boom, that it's going to be followed by a leaner time in terms of refinance transactions. And then I think purchases will be purchases, much more stable there for people that focus on that business. But as far as when that's going to happen or how abrupt it's going to be, the biggest feather in the cap for the origination community right now is the margin situation in the secondary, because lenders have had to slow down inbound business by raising rates. And we refer to this sometimes as pipeline control. But we don't have the operational capacity to do as many loans as people would like to do if rates were where rates should be based on MBS. And it's an unprecedented blowout in terms of spreads. You've never seen anything like it. And that means that as rates rise or as bond markets deteriorate, to some extent, the mortgage market won't have to deteriorate as quickly as treasuries. There is something to be said for these esoteric concepts like extension risk and lenders not wanting to get left on the island of holding a low yielding bond in a market where there's no demand for it. So it doesn't mean mortgage rates are invincible, but as long as the sell-off is slow and steady, and once you reach a certain plateau where lenders aren't too concerned about whatever the underlying MBS coupon is, then you'll see these pockets where mortgage rates are able to outperform whatever's going on in the broader bond market.
I'd love to get your thoughts on the Fed, biggest buyer of MBSs in the world. And you said in your notes, there's certainly plenty to talk about it as it relates to the Fed. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so the Fed, best way to think about their rate setting policy is that they are anchoring the short end of the yield curve, meaning they're saying your overnight rate is going to be at zero effectively for a long time. And from there, we see more and more variation as you move out the curve. What I mean by that is things that are very close to an overnight rate, and by very close, a loose term, but say two-year treasury yields are very low. The farther out the curve you go, 7, 10, 30 years, they can all move then your twos and threes and anything shorter than that. So that short end of the yield curve is well anchored by the Fed's rate setting policy. The longer end is a bit of a mystery, and it depends a lot on what they do with bond buying, what the market can tolerate, what the federal government does with the origination of new treasuries, if you will. So new treasury supply to pay for things like revenue shortfalls related to COVID or stimulus related to COVID. And it's a big balancing act, and it's happening at the same time that the Fed is in an experimental phase. Well, they always are. This is new stuff where we are really waking up to this new reality of inflation being something we have to try to get to move up, as opposed to something that we really want to get to move down. Because Dave, remember, and I know you can barely remember because you were so young in the 80s, that the 80s were a very scary time for inflation. And it was like the big boogeyman of the rate market. And Volcker did his thing and kind of was the hero of fighting off inflation. And then it moved lower and lower, and rates moved lower and lower. But that was the defining characteristic of the bond market. And inflation had this, I don't know, it caused mortal fear for those who like low rates. And when inflation stayed under 2% so nicely for the past two decades, I think for the first decade of that, it was a little bit of a, okay, we really don't want inflation to go back to 2%. So we got to be careful with that. But then the financial crisis came along and it's like, oh gosh, Bernanke's education, his worldview was focused heavily on learning from Japan, and he really wanted to avoid that. And so he shifted toward, hey, we got to get this stuff back up. And it seemed like we might have been on our way to doing that to some extent. And then coronavirus came along and said, okay, now you have no chance at getting inflation up to 2% unless you really do something drastic. And that's exactly why we've seen the Fed come out with guns blazing recently. And everything depends on how successful that's going to be. And we just don't know how successful it's going to be, because when inflation was falling in the 90s, some say it had much less to do with monetary policy and much more to do with the proliferation of technology and e-commerce becoming a more globally interconnected economy.
But then you interject President Trump's opinions on the thoughts on the Fed, and we have ourselves a whole lot more unknowns. Where is this heading? And so it's going to be fascinating.
And I think they're going to be finding out how it works right about when we are. And the big risk is if they are as successful as they could be, and we actually do see it leading to inflation, then rates are going to have to adjust higher to keep inflation from going too high.
I've been talking about this because there's so much here. So we're going to need to get you scheduled sooner than later to come on and talk about that. So we may drag a couple of your friends that I know, some of the ones that we share a common respect for. I'd love to have that discussion, because I think planning is beginning for where are rates going post the refinance boom. And what's going to drive that? When is that going to happen? So I think it's going to be a great hot topic. And again, we want to bring relevant information, and you bring it all the time. So I want to say, Matt, thank you so much. We kind of, folks, put Matt in the front. He was going to join us on the hot topic, but he's a pretty busy guy today with what's going on in the market. So Matt, thanks so much for taking time to join us. And
thank you, Dave.
You bet, your bud. And if you go check out mbslive.net and you put in LOL, you'll get an extended free trial. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate that. Sending that out to our listeners. Appreciate it so much. All right, let's get over to Alice Alvey. Good to have you here. Alice is the CMB Vice President of Education and Training at the marvelous Union Home Mortgage. And she's got this week's legislative update. What you got, Alice?
Hi, Dave. Hello, listeners. Today, I just have a quick thing to just get you an update on what Rob Van Rapphorst mentioned earlier. And that was this issue of the Conference of State Bank Supervisors putting out a proposal to get comments due by December 31st regarding this proposed regulatory framework for independent mortgage bankers. Now, as Union Home is a very fierce independent mortgage banker, we love our independence. And with that, though, IMBs over the years, especially in volatile times, have become under regulators, magnifying glass for feeling very different. We aren't banks, right? So does that make an IMB more vulnerable or less vulnerable in certain times of vulnerability? And this proposal is designed to say, if I have state regulators coming in and auditing me, then it would be easier in theory to have it be the same process with each state, and not that each state has all these differences. So for those of you who aren't familiar with who CSBS is, that's a little bit of a high level. The Conference of State Bank Supervisors is like what it sounds. It's the collaborative of all 50 states, and they get together to coordinate the licensing. You may recognize them with your NMLS activity. So within this, as we've been taking a look at it, I think we'll talk about it a little bit as the weeks go on. Our biggest concern, one of the concerns as an IMB is, if this comes out to be more robust than what the Federal Housing Finance Agency has already proposed, you can see that as IMBs, we'd be more susceptible to need to consolidate? What happens with this large market participants? And if they're more regulated, does that mean we need to consolidate? Do we see more consolidation in the industry? How is this going to affect the smaller entities that are now maybe looking at how can I stand up to this type of regulatory scrutiny? And will I be able to meet the requirements? So it's very robust. So it'll make it more strict in some states. Obviously, states all along the way have different regulations as far as how strict people should be. You all know that when you get your state licensing. Right. Some states have extra courses you need to take and others don't because they all have different experiences. So we'll watch this closely. I'm going to go out to some of the industry participants and see the thoughts that people have on this, and we'll keep talking about it because certainly as an industry, you want to make sure as LOs, you're paying attention to the impact of Fannie and Freddie, which the Federal Housing Finance Agency essentially oversees them. And you want to make sure you're keeping an eye on this. This adverse market fee was a big thing. And that came from Fannie and Freddie. So CSBS and FIFA putting more regulations on IMBs is going to be something we'll watch very closely. So as of now, it just got kicked off, and we'll see what types of comments are coming in and keep you posted. So that's all for now, Dave, and I'll kick it back to you.
And a big shout out to the MBA. I was talking to Tricia Magliazzo, all that the MBA has done to try to keep that adverse fee, mitigate as much of that as possible. It's really good. So appreciate that shout out. Some props to the MBA. Thanks, Alice, so much. Appreciate what you're doing there at Union Home Mortgage. We're looking forward to having you part of the Hot Topic discussion. Alan is dialed in, but he said, let me roll my comments into the Hot Topic segment. So let's move on over to Andy Schell, the Prophet Doctor. Andy, how are you doing, sir?
I am good. Dr. Andy Schell, the Prophet Doctor. I am here. This week I am teaching a webinar for the MBA. Last time we had 500 people show up. So this week we're going to talk about learn how mortgage lenders get money, use money, spend money, and make a profit. So you can go to the MBA.org, go to education, type in accounting webinar, and these five webinars pop up. So how has 2020 treated mortgage lending? So if we look at the country, look at the world, we would say 2020 will be known as the year of a global pandemic. And as we look at mortgage lending, we're going to say 2020 is a year of record profit for mortgage lending. So record profit means record paychecks, and record paychecks means record W-2 earnings reported to the IRS. It also means record earnings for every originator reported on the NMLS report that will be reviewed by Department of Labor, Department of Justice. So I think one of the things to start to benchmark to think about is what do we do with this prosperity? And so it just so happens it is time to start your 2020 tax planning. So it's October, it's time to start thinking about donations, contributions, making contributions to IRS-qualified charitable donations. Make sure it's an IRS-qualified donation. Not every charity is 501c3 or otherwise a deductible expense. There's a lot of options out there. I want to take just 30 seconds to mention one of the ones that I've known about for a long time, and that's called a navigation center. When you hear about a navigation center, well, is that a web browser? What's a navigation center? So a navigation center is a homeless support organization. It helps provide food, medicine, mental support, help homeless people find an apartment and develop skills to get a job. Now, the navigation centers also help the homeless get an ID card because you can't apply for a job without an ID. It's hard to apply for a job without an address. Also, the navigation centers help homeless learn to overcome the things that led to homelessness, if it's related to drugs, if it's unemployment, which unfortunately many may be facing today. Once you've lost a job and lost a home and become homeless, how are you going to get back into the workforce? So that's part of what homeless navigation centers do, is they help homeless get IDs and learn about how to stay off of the lifestyle. Real quick, the last point is these started in San Francisco, and the thing that's different about navigation centers is they don't foster dependence. They don't just give away stuff. They also enable self-reliance and independence. They teach people how to be successful. The key difference about a navigation center is that it encourages the people that come in to create a why to take the next step. Why should they come back? Why should they apply for the job? Why should they get the ID? All of those things are important. I support a homeless navigation center in Austin, and I encourage, given the unprecedented prosperity that mortgage lending employees are experiencing this year, I'd encourage everyone to consider the homeless navigation center. So there you go. Totally off topic. But what do you do with your profit is part of what the profit offer talks about.
Yeah, well, it's tax savings too. There's a practical side of it. So it's a bottom line issue, what you can do to save money and do good. And so it's a double. This is where 1 and 1 equals something greater than 2. I like that. Synergy. Very good. Very good, Eddie. I like that. In fact, when you and I had barbecue on Saturday, which was so enjoyable, you talked about how you serve on a board. So not only are you doing it, you didn't bring it up, but I want to give everyone a shout out. You put your money where your mouth is and your time where it is. And so you're serving on a board. And I think that is, I think if I'm correct, you're the chairman of the board of the local one. So I think that's outstanding. We need to be doing more of that. So we do so much for the housing market. We help people in so many ways and areas of our lives. But with all the money that's being made, what are you doing with your money? Are you doing anything that is helping those that cannot afford a home, that are on the journey to home ownership? Check it out. Andy, is there a website they can go to learn more?
Yeah, they just Google Sunrise Navigation Center or homeless navigation centers. They're all over the country. Again, it started in San Francisco, started in Fremont. So just Google it. The one I work with is Sunrise Navigation Center in Austin. But they're all over the country. Just find one that you want to support and help them help others.
I love it. That's a very good point. Folks, that ends the weekly update of our podcast. And for those of you listening live, stay right here. We're going to move right into the hot topic. For those of you listening on a downloaded basis, just go move on to the next segment or the next podcast, because it will be what we're about to record for our hot topic segment. So, folks, good to have you with us. This is the Hot Topic segment of the Lickin' on Lending podcast. And today, I am excited because we have a roundtable discussion with our regular guests. We're gaining insights and reflections on what is going on in the industry. And we're going to get right into it. Alan Pollock is here, and we're going to start talking about technology and start right off, because probably nothing is changing our industry, where things are going, what has happened, and where things are going, then technology. And so, Alan, let's get it started off by, is there any magical software out there that you're seeing that's going to change the way our industry operates? Or what's your thoughts? Comment?
Man, I wish there was magical software, and I wish I built it.
Yeah.
Because then I could retire on my magical yacht with my magical friends. It'd be fantastic. But no, there definitely is not one magical pill. It's funny. We talked about this quite a bit. When you look at the press releases in our industry and you look at how people describe their solutions, they make it sound like it's the magical pill. Breaking, award-winning, industry-leading, automated, artificial machine learning. The reality is, if you take the mortgage industry and you break it into pieces, which is a very systematic approach, like a manufacturing line, you've got to make sure that manufacturing line can manufacture product and it can run. And you, one, have to have manufacturing parts and inventory so that if a screw pops out or the machine that makes the Hershey Kiss look like the Hershey Kiss, that nozzle breaks, you got an extra nozzle. So we have to, one, make sure that we have the redundancy of our manufacturing line. And it's an expensive thing to think about, right? Because we have people, which is the most expensive component. But then we also have technology that can assist in areas that just makes the most sense, right? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So how much insanity is on our manufacturing line, and what can we do to improve it? So if you look at the technology solutions that are out there today, and I've been part of many of them, and we've probably been to a number of virtual conferences so far this year in technology showcases, there's fantastic solutions, completely innovative things. When you look at what happened with COVID, the ability for a homeowner to take pictures, to do an indoor appraisal and to geotag those photos, the date, time, and location, the ability for e-notes and to extract the data from that e-note and automate and run quality assurance analysis to run collateral, credit, and compliance rules, the things that takes a human eye. Let's keep the humans for the things that are exception-based. Let's do that. But when you break apart that mortgage process and you look at the manufacturing line, we're focused a lot on right acquisition and the trust and worthiness of the customer wanting your product. We're focused a lot on how do you engage the customer and provide them the transparency within regulatory and compliant ways. that they need to want to transact with you? How do you nurture that person from lead to prospect to actual right. application? How do you manage your risk across that? If you just look at that first piece, there's probably 10 different technology solutions there alone. Say, is there one magic pill? Definitely not. The only other thing I want to mention, David, so I don't take us sideways on going too deep, is we're moving to a world where borrowers, loan officers, because we're both, we're borrowers and loan officers, we're going mobile. Everything is being devised mobile. If you look at, we talked about last week, the new iOS update. For those Android fans, that's the Apple update to iPads and iPhones. iPads are becoming more and more popular, and the newest Apple device, so they call it Mac OS, is going more app-oriented, similar to an iPad. Things are run better, they integrate better, they're more universal, so there's this movement. And so we have to think about those antiquated old systems that are out there. And listen, I work for an LOS system, and I can tell you without advertising for what they're doing, things are moving ahead with a major investment in moving away from the old way of doing business, which is this giant, heavy application, and moving to where things are app-oriented. That concept that Mac OS is going to, where you have an app and you have individualized apps and pieces that you need to manage those parts right. of your business, and going mobile and going accessible. So anyways, we're moving in that direction. So there's yeah. not one magic pill.
I know it. And I'm going to go to Andy, and then I'm going to go to Alice on this topic, because I love the new Mac iOS system, and I'm just loving what the new features are in this. What's your perspective on technology? Because I know you're a fan of technology. You love it. But you also have that CFO brain. So your comments, and then coming over to Alice, because I know she's doing some things very innovative. I want to talk about it. Andy?
A couple of quick things. One, I love Alan's comment about the Hershey's Kiss
yes.
loop. And that breaking off, that's actually called a reject and a byproduct. And so in accounting, that's where wood chips on lawns came from. Is we have tons of, and plywood, all came part of those byproducts. So monitoring workflow, I think, is a great thing to do. And I also wanted to mention quick thing, and Alan didn't talk about it, but at his company, Open Close, they're actually launching a stack architecture, which is revolutionary. It's going to be miles ahead of the competition when it rolls out. And that kind of flexibility is like the Mac OS with the various apps. And I agree with you, Dave. CFOs need to worry about the next thing, the next thing. When's it going to work? When's it going to end? When are people yeah. going to actually use it? So I think that's where part of the adoption is so important, because it's not just about the next new thing. That is important, but it's also make it user-friendly, make it usable, make it improve your workflow instead of the tail wagging the dog. Let's have the technology do what we want it to do to enable us to be effective in our business. So with that, I'll give it back to you.
Good. I love that. Alice, I just got to just shout out to Bill and Al, what they're doing there at Union Home Mortgage, because they're honoring you in a way. We've talked about this before, but I'm going to just slightly go there again. Can't resist, because it's right down the middle of where I think so much important development needs to happen. That's called business intelligence. And Bill and Al have developed a system called Ask Alice. It's a query system. So they honored you because you're the head of training, and you are the best. You have all this knowledge, tremendous amount of knowledge, and you have so much to offer to our industry. And they capitalized on that. And so it's a system where it's an intelligence. It's business intelligence, where instead of calling your underwriter, calling your processor, calling Alice, you can get hold of her, is Ask Alice. So talk about some of the innovative things you're doing there at Union Home in a practical way.
Oh, I'm happy to. So real quick on the Ask Alice, it was funny because I did work with our IT team to develop it and pull together. You do a mix of your own development and some of the things you find off the shelf that help you get there because it's going to add a tremendous amount of efficiency, right? That type of software and developing that is absolutely something you can justify in the efficiency that it gains for everybody to have information at their fingertips. I want to go a little bit further into what Andy was talking about. We're playing off each other here, this adoption and how to improve it. One tip for everybody who's listening is, and especially to those in senior management, is you have to have a way for people to every single day submit suggestions on how to improve their day-to-day life in the technology. We implemented this about a year and a half ago, and we have hundreds and hundreds of suggestions, and we have implemented every one of them, except for the ones that you go, hey, can I always get the best rate in town? Nope, you're probably not going to get that. So people only have to go one place to complete their job on a day-to-day basis. But little things like, why doesn't this field do this? Or how about if we added this? And my sister in her executive position would be, seriously, those aren't major initiatives. Those aren't following major corporate objectives. You mean your senior executives stop what they're doing? Everybody listens and follows and listens to those ideas. And the answer is yes, because we believe little things make huge improvements. And that is really how we survived a big part. One of the main things of how we survived the increase in volume over COVID was we've been implementing those 50 little things. And they all amounted to a huge thing, not to mention what you get from partners at your company who are now excited because they can implement and be a part of change and improvement.
Which is such a good segue. We could spend two podcasts full time, hours, just talking about technology and some of the things. But Alice, what you just were touching on is having people's voices heard is really a key to retaining top talent. And we're looking at what salary demands are out there. We know what the pressure is. Every listener listening to this podcast is getting job offers with higher salaries. I'll give you this much. You just come on over. I'll pay you a sign-on bonus. Just come on over. Please come over and help us. Hope it doesn't matter. We'll probably lay you off as soon as we get with that higher salary. We'll probably have to lay you off right afterwards. But it's just so good. How do you retain top talent? So there's numerous studies. So I'm going to give out four real quick topics and I want to get this around. And Alice, you guys are doing a really good job, as well as something I love is you're not just trying to hold on to everything you got, but you're bringing in fresh new talent. We're going to go to that in just a minute. But in light of salary demands and everything else, do you know where on a scale of 1 to 10, where salaries or income actually falls once someone has the job? Yes, it's important when someone's getting the job. But do you know where that actually lands? Study after study has said on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the most important, and I'm talking fast, so I fit this all in. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the most important, 10 being the least important, it always falls in the bottom half. In other words, 6, 7, or 8. You know what the top three are is when I say I'm working at Union Home or whatever the name of your company is, I have a sense of pride. I have a sense of who I'm associated with, who I'm working with. The second thing is, do I feel my voice is heard? And when I give a suggestion and drop it into the suggestion box, is there just a shredder at the bottom of the suggestion box that just chews up and they do nothing with it? You've all seen that cartoon. Yeah, we welcome your suggestions and there's a shredder underneath it. That has been like that for many companies. The third thing is, do you understand what you do? In other words, if I'm in a company and I'm working in processing or opening or underwriting or preparing docs, do I understand what my part does to contribute to the overall process? Those are the top three reasons. And then the other thing that was just playing out is what I'm telling listeners is this: what are you doing to educate and lift your talent? I could tell a great story of myself, but I'm not going to get there. Let's get into that. Alice, you're doing so many things right and retaining talent. What are some of the things? And then we're going to get around to go backwards, Andy, and then back to Alan. And I love getting Alan's thoughts there in technology out there doing. But Alice, what are you guys doing there at Union Home to retain top talent?
I think you have to challenge people and give them the ability to grow themselves. One of the books I recommend for folks, if you like quick reads, there's a book called The 27 Challenges Managers Face. And there's a section in that book on the challenge of managing superstars. And it gives some very specific action items that you can do to help manage your superstars. Things like how to keep them engaged. What do they really want, Dave, as you mentioned, on how to keep them, how do you need to retain them? And this is a lot to do with you have to elevate as a manager. What are you doing in their one-on-ones to discuss when they work, how they work, what is the work that they're doing? Is it important enough? Getting them very involved and committed in the company. Then you also have to know how to accept if you're going to lose one for sure. What do you do then? How do you manage that? And when do you need to move a superstar into a more leadership position in order to keep them challenged? So I love that little, that's one of the challenges in that book that we teach our teams to. It's by Bruce Tulgen, and I recommend that as a quick topic. So if you're not sure what to do, that's one of the things I recommend. It's really up to you to motivate and challenge them, like you said, beyond pay. We do a lot of leadership training on this for our entry-level managers, and they find it as a great Bible that they keep by their desks. Every new manager comes to our company gets this book.
Andy Schell, your thoughts. I love that.
I made some notes as you were first talking about this, and so I completely agree with the study that you found. In the research that I've done, there are three or four things, and the things we've already mentioned, but the things that help people feel connected, engaged, supported, include being respected is one, don't yell at them. Don't surprise yep. them. If you're going to avoid it, if you need them to work the weekend, don't tell them Friday afternoon. Recognize their contributions, even celebrate the small steps. People do birthdays, but when a new employee closes their first 7 loans, or just find a bunch of little things to say, thank you, we care. And obviously you talked about the, listen, my biggest things are respect, which includes letting people be heard. Learn to listen to what people say, and it's not just the overt statements, it's the body language, the how they speak, the when they speak, the why they speak. All those things are important to encourage people to participate. And then obviously, as Alice was saying, engage. Engagement is super important, but that also means enablement. So enablement means providing a means to be successful. That's training, that's how to make a difference, to know why what they're doing is important and how to do what they do well. So that starts with defined workflow and procedures that are converted into easy to follow directions that are like cartoons even, or videos and whatever else, and then the engagement part. So the engagement part can extend all the way through iconology. So that means like logos, a logo lapel pin. Get people involved in internal teams, like the birthday party planning. Form groups of people internally, constantly pursue improvement. So you form groups with several teams from different groups, and they only meet once a month, and they can talk about how to make it better. That's engagement as well.
It is one of our favorite topics when we're having barbecue sometimes, doing that. Alan, let's get over to you. You're talking about how you can do this. Is there any technology you're seeing? Is there things? This is a human solution. Is there a technology enabler?
So there is, of course. There's other solutions out there. You want to make sure, especially when you're hiring certain kinds of candidates, that you can accurately verify who they are, right? There's technology that looks at their social media, past, present, and even, I can't say future because I can't do that, but past and present. Those are all great things, but I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm going to switch the conversation on you, David. We're talking about technology. Hiring technology people is very hard, and hiring technology people that fit within the organization is very hard. Tech people are the engineering or the scientist type. Not that number crunchers and compliance people and financial people aren't either, but they're A-type personality. So all I can say is that company culture, as technology has grown and more of us see the need for technology and our companies go through transformations, we see the need for more empathy. We see the need for more trust and understanding, less micromanagement, right? And it has to do with all types of employees. Giving technology people the respect that you would give to a non-tech person and giving them some freedom and less micromanagement and trust. And then also helping to teach them, right? They tech people are not all, they don't understand the business sometimes. They come from the black hole of tech. So I think finding culturally somebody that's going to fit well within the organization, it's not about just the right person for the right role. It's the right person for the team, for the company, for the future of the company. So that's how I would answer that question.
That's good. Really good. Appreciate that. And then if you read the book by Patrick Lencioni, The 5 Dysfunctions of Leadership, is the first one is a lack of trust. It's the foundation of everything. And that you works so well in technology, works so well across the board, all of it, all the way across all the parts. I want to get over to Andy on the last topic. Andy, I want to get into where are we seeing things going 2021. We're seeing refinances. What happens if refinances drop 60%? Then we get over to Alice. And then Alan, again, we'll let you wrap it up. What are your thoughts, Andy? Real quickly, what are your thoughts? What should be lenders be doing and preparing?
Well, so Matt talked a little bit about the prognosis for 2021. And at some point, we all know rates will rise. And when rates rise, the refis are going to slow down. Purchase may slow down as well, but not as much. We know the MBA, Marina talked about a couple of weeks ago, that the MBA is forecasting a 60% drop in refi next year. So assume that that happens. And what does that mean? What we always see when we see competition for transaction volume is that we see margin compression. We also see we've expanded the industry to its maximum possible size at this point. And when we cut refi in half, and for a lot of lenders, refi has grown to be 60 or 70%, you cut that in half, and suddenly you got the big shrink. You got the balloon and the air is going to go out, and it's going to go, it's going to all come back. And so when that happens, you can't keep everybody. And so we're going to fight for volume. So we're going to fight with margin compression, which is going to erode all the profits we made in 2020. Not all, but I'm exaggerating. It's also, though, an opportunity to pick who stays in the boat.
Yep.
We've got a whole bunch of people. Who are we going to keep? So I think thinking about who stays, who goes, it might not be first in, first out. It might be an opportunity to enhance and upgrade. And then also have a forecast and a cash flow forecast to know how this is going to impact you. And at some point during margin compression, you got to just say no and focus on service and not just rate. Because if you always chase rate, you're always going to not be the best. Anyway, I'll leave it there, Dave.
That's good. Good. Yeah, so many comments I want to interject in that, but let's get over to Alice. Alice, what are you guys doing to prepare for whenever that happens, if the MBA's prediction is true of 2020, 2021, I think a 60% drop? What are you guys doing there? Anything you can share with us without getting into the secret sauce?
Absolutely. We're a purchase shop anyway. So for us, we just constant reminders for the team, putting purchases first, really staying focused on that realtor relationship is a big part of it, as well as Alan mentioned earlier, you have to have your tech stack that allows you to get out further up the funnel to reach customers sooner in that purchase transaction. So I think we're very focused to not let the refis become that dessert that's always on the table. We know that you have to have the steak and potatoes that got to be there every time to keep the doors open. So I think everybody knows and expects it. So operationally, that's why I think we were going to talk a little bit too about turn times. That's why is a lot of companies are not going, hey, I'm not going to staff up for 24-hour turn time right now because I know this is going away. We're just going to have to balance. So I think that's my 2 cents on that subject right now.
That's good. I'm glad you interjected the turn times because it's one of the things I wanted to get to. But look at all of the big headliner issues. Alan, I want to get to you and we'll wrap it up with that. I want to just interject this. Go back and to encourage our listeners to listen to the May 25th, 2020 podcast on the hot topic where grow your mortgage company through relationships using video. Now, it's the interview we did, Alec Hansen. And Alec has a book, and the reason I'm bringing this up is get his book, Bypassed. It is exactly what Alice was talking about, and we all know is coming. The consumer behavior is different, and you need to maintain its purchase business, but how do you stay in touch with that? And Alice just touched on it. Again, go get the book, Bypassed, by Alec Hansen. And go listen to the May 25th podcast. Alan.
I can't really add too much more different than what our in-house experts have just added. Really, everyone's opinion is just so spot on. Ultimately, if you've got great technology partners and you've been implementing and investing in great technology solutions, sometimes it's not necessarily a direct impact like what Alice is doing at her company with Ask Alice. Those little steps creating such a bigger change, not just in technology and like this page look better, but in how people interact and respect the technology and the fact that new technology will be better adopted. That's so important in times like today. In addition, being able to leverage technology partners. I'll give you an example. I've got a customer who through one of our technology partners is increased their post-closing pre-ship audits to a team that they didn't know even had that service. And it's a temporary ramp up. And so it's those kind of things. It's nurture, mature, strengthen your relationships, understand the technology, how to leverage it, how to work with your partners. That's why they're called partners and everything everyone else on our podcast today has said, just such great opinions.
Good stuff. Alan, Alice, Andy, thank you so much for your contribution to this spot. Matt, who's already had to leave and go back to work at his desk. Appreciate all of you contributing to this podcast each and every week. Listeners, yes, I did not get to any of your questions. I want to get through this. We almost need to have another podcast following on this just to answer all the questions that came in. Thank you so much for your listenership. Thank you for your sharing this podcast with others. We appreciate it. We don't get paid for doing this. It's just something that we do because we want to give back. And we're honored to have your listenership. The thing you can do in exchange is share it with others. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to seeing you back here next week. Out of time here to say thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, CMLA, Endicom, Incelerate, Ainsworth, Mobility RE, all of them, MBA, everything. So good to have you back here next week. We are going to be hopefully having a surprise guest, working on that right now. Gotta go. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.